All right. This is tape one, side one, and it's July 10th, 1990, Tuesday. We are oral history interviewers, Mari Lurie and Harold Kimmel, and we are interviewing Gloria Elbing for the Pittsburgh section of the National Council of Jewish Women. Now, in order to test our tape, Gloria, would you please give us your name, and the year you were born, and your address.
My full name is Gloria Raffel Elbling. I was born 1926, July 17th. My address is 1437 Severn, S-E-V-E-R-N, Street.
Very
Pittsburgh,
good.
Pennsylvania, 15217.
All right, we're going to talk first about your immediate family. That's your father, mother, and so forth. And what we'd like you to do is tell us as much as you can about your background, beginning with your grandfather or father and mother, and include the names of the parents and the full names of your children. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're on.
All right. My mother's family came right after World War I from Lithuania. They were a very large family. Several of her brothers and sisters came before, but most of them came with the grandmother, with my grandmother and grandfather. Their names were Jacob and Rina Radbord. They came because we had a great aunt and an uncle. I had a great aunt and an uncle who had lived in Pittsburgh. They were childless. The woman was her name was Mrs. Harris, was a sister of my grandfather. They lived in a small, to me it was an alley that you walked through off of Webster Avenue, and my grandparents moved to Webster Avenue. Life certainly was difficult, I'm sure, for them. They lived in a house that had, I think it had two or three stories, a party wall house, and they, in addition to all of them living there, they also rented out space to a family by the name of Present. And Saul Present was a printer here in the city, and he raised the child there. In addition to that, each time one of their friends or a newcomer that they knew from Lithuania came to the city, they also moved in with them and sometimes stayed for as much as 2 and 3 years, not 2 and 3 weeks. My grandfather was a very handsome man, tall, over 6 foot tall, with blue eyes and a long beard. My grandmother looked more like a gypsy. She was close to maybe 5 foot, maybe under 5 feet tall, dark haired. Her maiden name was Horne, H-O-R-N-E. I don't know too much about the generations before, except that I was named after my grandfather's mother, and my Jewish name is Gitzel. As far as some of the brothers and sisters are concerned, there was a family next door by the name of Levine, and my uncle married one of the young women from that household, and that's the picture that I have now, in a famous picture that I have hanging on the wall in the dining room. My mother married a man from Chicago. Since it was a large family, I had an aunt who lived in Chicago, and when my mother went to visit, she met this young man and married him. Unfortunately, it was not a successful marriage, and when I was 3 years old, my parents were divorced. We lived, when the marriage was still intact, we lived on Fifth Avenue near the Brady Street Bridge, and they had a business. In fact, I slept in the back of we had a bedroom in the back of the business for a while. I can just recall that, but not too clearly. I know that we did not have a bathroom there because I recall going up to the Soho Street Baths to take a bath. That eventually became the yeshiva that we know of today. We also lived across the street in some row houses in that particular neighborhood. When they decided to have a divorce and terminate the marriage, my mother and I moved in with my grandparents. And so I was raised in a home with aunts, loving aunts and uncles, and a loving Bubby and Zadie. And probably that's where I was instilled with the love of Judaism, with the love of, at that time, Palestine, with the love of our people, a concern for Jewish survival. But a good bit of it also is my mother and her upbringing in that particular family. It was a very, very close family. My first cousins were just like brothers and sisters. They are to this day, and their extended families. This family got together very often for every occasion. They were always coming with their children to visit at the Bubby and Zadie's home. When some of them moved out of the city, they would come for extended vacations, and this went on for many, many years, where they would come from Iowa, from Manassas, from Wheeling. I had an aunt that lived in Wheeling, West Virginia, and a full family there. The Horn family that I mentioned also, a very famous man in Wheeling, Max Horn, was my mother's first cousin. Sam Horn in the city was a cousin. We were also related to the Sugarman family. And Sam Sugarman, who was the president of Kaufman's, was the cousin. His mother was my mother's first cousin. And that's from my grandfather's side of the family, the Sugarman family. And that was also a large family, and we were close with them, too. I can recall on Sukkot, we always had a lulav and an esrog. And it was considered a mitzvah, at least my mother told me it was a mitzvah, to take this lulav and esrog to every relative. And I would go to the Horn side of the family, and this was already in Squirrel Hill, and to the Sugarman side of the family. I was about 6 years old, 5 years old probably, when we moved to Squirrel Hill from the Hill District. And we moved to Pecusset Street. At that time, there was a small building that was the Bell Telephone next door, and that's still there. Polize just had a very small restaurant. There was a small A&P, like a mom-and-pop A&P across the street. There were no gas stations there at the time. There was certainly no parkway at the time, and there was no Squirrel Hill Theater when we moved to Pecusset Street. On that whole block, there were probably maybe two or three children until we got to Whiteman Street. And one of my very close friends is Dorothy Brody Dresbold to this very day. She lived in that particular block of Pecusset Street. We saw a lot of changes, and yet not too many changes on Murray Avenue, but of course the Shara Torah was not in existence. The Beth Sholem was much smaller. The Polizetic was already there. And I was part of the Beth Sholem, and I have been part of the Beth Sholem for over a half a century. I started there in the Sunday school. Although I will say that my first, I guess it was in kindergarten, if there's such a thing as Sunday school in kindergarten, or kindergarten in Sunday school, it was at the Chofetz Chaim Synagogue, which was torn down. That's on Beacon near Murray. Right now it happens to be an empty lot. My grandfather was very involved in that synagogue. He was a very close friend of Rabbi Ashinsky's. And we were also very friendly with the whole Ashinsky family, and Yale Borkin and his wife, who Yale Borkin was the editor of the predecessor of the Jewish Chronicle. I guess it was the Criterion.
What year would you say that was?
Well, let's see. I'm going to be, I have to figure this out now.
Oh, I have a pen.
I'm going to be 64 now, 1 year before Social Security. And
1926.
1926 is when I was born. Right.
Oh,
but you wanted to know what year it was when I was involved at the Chofetz Chaim, and I would say I was probably 4 or 5 when we had just moved to Squirrel Hill. But I went there for a very brief period of time, and it was Rabbi Miller's, I think it was Rabbi Miller's wife, one of the Ashinsky women, young women, who was my Sunday school teacher for a very brief period, although I can remember some of the biblical stories that she told us at that time. And from there, I went on to the Beth Sholem. My grandfather was also involved with the Vat HaKashrut. which was, I have some of those papers in the garage, and I intend to give them to somebody. They're after me to get the papers out, and I will. He also would go to, each year he would go to the flour mills in a small town to check the way they would grind the flour prior to making the matzahs to make sure they were kosher. And there are families there in some of those towns that were one Jewish family, and he would stay with them because he certainly kept strictly kosher.
Mm-hmm.
He was the type of a man that went to shul three times a day. He never pressed his religion on anyone. He was proud of women learning, his daughters learning. He was very proud of me. Naturally, I was named after his mother, so... and the fact that I came from this divorced background and lived in that house, I probably ended up being the favorite grandchild. He would sit many hours with me studying. Much of what he taught me or read with me probably has left, but like any education, you can't really take all of it away. My mother ended up staying in the household and working with my grandmother as a woman in the home. She never went out to hold a job. That wasn't the style in those years, nor did she ever remarry. Every time somebody would have somebody in mind to fix her up with, and she was a handsome woman, very good-looking woman. I don't know whether she was frightened or the fact that she used me as an excuse. She couldn't go to a small town. She wanted me to be raised in the city. She wanted me to have this Jewish education, and as a result, to her dying day, and it's 21 years since she passed away, she never remarried.
Mm-hmm.
As far as my involvement at the Beth Sholem is concerned, immediately I became involved in all the activities there, and we were very close with Rabbi Rose and his family, Alta, it was his wife, Rabbi Goodman A. Rose and Alta Rose. My mother and my aunt and my cousins were always part of the synagogue. It could be a blizzard, a snowstorm. We were the ones that were at the Friday night services, at the Saturday night services, mm-hmm. If there were 10 people there, we were there, and we would walk through ice and snow. I went to Hebrew school there. Those were the years when no one drove you. We always walked to the Hebrew mm-hmm. school with my cousins. There were times when it was a little bit dangerous. We had problems at times with the young kids that lived in Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
And when they would see us walking, there were several times they didn't pick on me, but they would pick on my cousin, a
mm-hmm.
young boy. And there were many times when they pushed us into the bushes, you know. And these were some of the racial things that were taking place even in those years in Squirrel Hill, but certainly nothing like the tensions that go on today in the world. I went all through Hebrew school there, all through Sunday school. I belonged to a junior congregation, attended all the junior congregation services. I was, probably mentioned, I was confirmed. I was amongst the first young women that were bat mitzvah, the Beth Sholem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a group bat mitzvah. It was not the same sort of a bat mitzvah that you have today, where you read from the Haftorah, where you do the trups, etc. But it was still a first for that congregation. And we had, the service was held on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you about 13 years old
when
you were confirmed?
Oh, 13.
So that
no, this was bat mitzvah. I was 13. When I was confirmed, I was 16. They were two separate things. This was one of the first bat mitzvahs for young girls at the Beth Sholem. Because it, in spite of the fact that the Beth Sholem is a conservative congregation, it still leans to the traditional side of conservative Judaism to this very day. I mean, right now, it's only a year since we had rights for women, and yet we've had women who were presidents of the synagogue and very capable women in the synagogue. It was that, at the Beth Sholem, I also did practice teaching once I finished for Sunday school, and at that time, Saul Abrams was the principal, although his father was involved with the Hebrew Institute. Going back to the Hebrew Institute, too, and I have ties to the Hebrew Institute, when I finished Hebrew school at the Beth Sholem, there was a special bus that would take us down to Wiley Avenue. This was an extension. It was not the best Hebrew school. I mean, in spite of the fact that it was better than nothing, there were just two of us, as far as the girls were concerned, that went, my cousin and I. And my cousins, by the way, my cousin and my aunt and uncle also lived on Pecosette Street, two doors away. And I had another aunt and uncle who lived about eight doors away on Pecosette Street. So you can see it was a very close family. In one case, we were inseparable since we were just two doors apart, although our lives had gone in different directions with different interests, but we could just hand things over the back fence, and my mother was forever cooking and baking and sending things over, you know, to her family. All right, now I'm going to go back to the, sorry that I went away from that, but
sorry.
I will go back.
Good story.
I will go back to the Beth Shalom and the involvement in going to the Hebrew Institute. At the Hebrew Institute, which was on Wiley Avenue, we had a Rabbi Gross who was a survivor of the Holocaust. He was our teacher there. And I don't think he was, his heart was not in with the position or even being here, because his wife and his son were still in, I would assume it was Germany, and they weren't here yet. Although I developed a very close relationship with Israel Goldstein and with Saul, not Goldstein, Israel Abrams and Saul Abrams. And as a result, I did practice teaching with them, and I ended up teaching Sunday school and working for the day camp.
Mm-hmm.
They had a day camp at the Hebrew Institute. This was also before the building, the new building, which isn't so new today. And
you mean the Beth Shalom building?
Now I'm talking about the Hebrew Institute building, because I was involved with the Hebrew Institute also.
Mm-hmm.
And I serve now, I happen to serve now as a vice president of the Hebrew
Institute. Is it still there, the Hebrew Institute?
The Hebrew Institute is no longer on Wiley Avenue, no.
Where is
the Hebrew Institute moved to Squirrel Hill. And
originally, on Beacon Street.
No, it was on, it's on Forbes. It's on the corner of Forbes and Denniston is the main building now. But originally it was housed in a house. There were two big houses there.
Mm-hmm.
The houses were on the spot where the Maxim Towers are right now.
Yeah.
They tore down those houses, and then they built the existing building, which is utilized to this day. I'm not sure who bought the building down on Wiley Avenue, because that's in the Hill District.
Right. What year? Do you remember what year it was? It was in the 40s then.
Probably. Well, I think the building is like 20, the new building is 25 years old. It was probably at least 30 or 40 years ago when all of this took place. I would have to check with the history of the Hebrew Institute.
Well, in the 50s, it's close.
But Rabbi Ashinsky, by the way, was also involved when they started the Hebrew Institute. And one of the roles of the Hebrew Institute was to go out to the outlying communities and to service synagogues and congregations that didn't have Sunday schools at the time. And I don't know the exact history, but I know that the Council of Jewish Women, the National Council of Jewish Women, was also involved in sending teachers out, because they always take on relevant projects.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the projects. They felt it was very important to go out to the outlying communities.
Right.
And it's almost gone full circle, because the Hebrew Institute today is once again servicing outlying Jewish communities that can no longer have the clientele because of demography, because of what's happened in that particular community. Also the budget, it takes a large budget to run a school today, so they've gone out and provided the counseling and the teaching and the curriculum, etc. So, as I say, it's gone full circle. Even big congregations like the B'nai Israel are having difficulty maintaining a religious school today. So that's one of the jobs of the Hebrew Institute, and that's another long and whole story. It turned out that I did end up teaching Sunday school. I don't know how prepared I was. I was starting at the pick, but none of us were that prepared. Even the Hebrew teachers at that time were, usually they were college students that were trying to make some extra money, and of course they do it today too, but I think they have a much better background. Children have much better opportunities with summer camps, etc.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When you were studying Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
right, did you actually learn to put Hebrew into English? Or did you just, were you just taught to read it?
Well, no. We were taught more than just the prayer book. We were taught more than just the prayer book. But I think the methods of teaching it and the curriculum and the textbooks that were used certainly were not adequate or did not measure up to what we have today, because I can recall doing conjugations and declensions and in Hebrew, and I didn't even know what it was all about. You know, we would take a verb and we would try to go through the whole thing, and Hebrew is a very, very difficult language. I mean, I had probably one of my best teachers was Eunice Rosen Baradon, who became the head of the School of Advanced Jewish Studies. Also, I had Mr. Baradon, who was a fixture at the Beshel, and he trained all the young boys for their bar mitzvah, so he was one of our teachers. In those years, I think it was difficult, it probably is today too, to maintain discipline in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And although in those years also, the parents had a different respect for Hebrew school. At least in our home, it carried the same weight, the same priorities as the secular school. I mean, you never skipped. You could be doing 20 things and you still had a half time. And speaking about doing 20 things, when my mother used to complain that I did too much once I was married, and there were times I wouldn't even tell her I was going to a meeting, or I had women in the house here and I'd tell them to be quiet because she'd say, "Oh, it's too much for you." I told her, well, she was the one that started it, because I went to Hebrew school sometimes twice a week, four times a week. I went to Friday, I went Sunday morning, I went Saturday morning, I took piano lessons.
Right.
I took dancing lessons, and that's another whole story from Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
Because Gene Kelly was going to Pitt at the time, and he and his brother Fred and his sister Louise were trying to make ends meet. It was during the Depression. They had a little dance studio up on Munhall Road, which is now the Imperial House. It was the Munhall Apartments. And in order to make some extra money, they ran a dancing school at the Beth Shalom every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was maybe 50 cents a lesson. At the end of the year, they had a Kermis. The same thing holds true with my piano lessons I took from Professor Litto. And the lessons were also 50 cents. And I recall my aunts and uncles who weren't married at the time, they would leave the two quarters on the table every week so that I would have the money to pay for the piano
mm-hmm.
lessons. So I also belonged to a club at the Y. The Y was in Oakland, was the big place.
Yeah.
To go, and we went there very often. I mean, you weren't afraid to travel there. We went on the streetcar, and I belonged to a little drama group there, and to a, at that time it was a high school sorority, and we would meet there. So we had many activities at the Y. Also, I never went to Lyama Kaufman camp that most of the children went to in those years. Mainly because I was an only child, and my mother, I think she sheltered me, or tried to shelter me, and then she decided one year we went to Atlantic City, we went to Philadelphia to visit my aunt's mother, and then they discovered Atlantic City because we went with a bus for the day and rented a locker, and stayed there, and she decided she liked that fresh air and that ocean air, and that was much better than sending me to camp, because the two of us could go and stay in a rooming house, and my aunt would go also, and we got this wonderful fresh air, and she also got the fresh air, and then she'd keep an eye on me. So I sort of resented not going to camp, because all the kids went to camp and they knew all the songs. And the funny thing is that one of my granddaughters, now they can afford to go to camp, and that her parents want to send her to camp, and she doesn't want to go to camp. So it's that these are the odd things that happen in life. I met my husband at the Beth Shalom. We had a young people's league in those years, and I guess it was right after the war, very end of the Second World War.
We like the dates, if you can remember.
Well, it must be at least
45.
Probably around 45.
Yeah.
Probably around 45.
Mm-hmm.
And
Was Beth Shalom in the new building by then?
Originally the Beth Shalom had a smaller building, but we always had the two buildings, but we did not have this extended sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
The new sanctuary is, I don't know how old that is, where they actually enlarged it. But the existing building was already there.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have the school building that we have today. We had a house next door.
So you didn't have the parking lot then that you have today?
No, we didn't have that parking lot, but okay. We didn't have the problems of parking. There weren't that many cars, and and a lot of people only had one car in those years, so it was no problem to park. I started to say that we had a young people's league at the Best Shalom, and this was set up for, actually there were a lot of young men coming back from the service, and a lot of singles, in spite of the fact that they went to the Y, and at the Y too, I should get back to that, Miriam Ephraim was there, I don't know if you recall her. She was in charge of like social activities, and they had the USO there at the Y. I was always tall and looked older, so she picked some of us to come on a Saturday evening when they would have dances with the soldiers that were stationed.
You were a hostess.
We were a hostess at the Y. Going back to the Young People's League at the Best Shalom, we would have almost every week we had some social function there. We had about 200 in attendance that would come. And we had all sorts of activities and committees and officers. We had a Bible group with Rabbi Rose. We had a bowling group. We had picnics. It was a wonderful place for young people to come and to meet other young people. And, of course, that's one of the mitzvahs in Jewish life is to get two Jewish young people together. And that's where I met my husband. I happened to have been the social chairman for the Young People's League. And I needed so many fellas and girls on the committee, and my husband had just moved here from Boston. He was born in Salem, Massachusetts, and then was raised in Lynn, Massachusetts. That's where he was bar mitzvah at a Reformed temple, and from there they went, his father was in the shoe lining business, they went to Nashua, New Hampshire. He graduated from high school in Nashua, New Hampshire.
What is his name, Gordon?
His name is Irving Nelson Elbling. He's one of three brothers. His mother's name was Ida Shishelsky Elbling, and his father's name was Alex Elbling. He came here directly from college. He was interviewed by Westinghouse and came here to work at the research and development out in Fort, that time it was in Forest Hills, now it's out in Churchill. And it was really, I guess, at the tail end of the war, and although he was also very sheltered by his mother, she agreed to let him come here because he was getting a special deferment from the Army in order to do the work that he was doing at Westinghouse at the research lab. Unfortunately, I never met his mother. She was bedridden for about 8 years, and both he...
Go ahead.
Both he and his older brother literally worked their way through college. They not only worked their way through college, but they also worked in the home. And the father had to give up his business and also moved back to the home and ran a little business out of the home because they had a brother who was 13 years younger, and they were taking care of him also. They did such chores. They cleaned chickens, they scrubbed floors, they ran the sweeper, they did everything. And in addition, both he and his older brother, who was 18 months older, worked in a supermarket, and the older brother worked in a bakery and scrubbed floors in the bakery. And both of them put themselves through college. My husband went to Northeastern. He went on a work program where you went for 5 years and you went, you know, one semester, and then you worked, and then you went to school. And he always said he was on the train with the Dartmouth kids and the Harvard kids, because he was traveled. By the way, he went to college to Northeastern in Boston, but they still lived in Nashua, New Hampshire. So in addition, he would go on the train. They were all able to buy sandwiches from the vendors on the train, and he always carried his lunch with him. He also had, I think, one tie. He owned one tie and one suit the whole 5 years that he went through college. And I would say that it probably made a better person out of him. I mean, he was the type of a person that the minute I married him, I felt I was liberated.
What year did you marry him?
I married him in 1946.
Can't forget that, can you?
No, June 30th, 1946.
Good.
As I said, we met at the Beth Sholem. I put him on my committee. I put him on my committee. My mother liked him right away. He came to services, and she felt so sorry this young man was living alone in Wilkinsburg in some rooming house, and he didn't have this Jewish food, and she was always making extra food. So there were times that she'd see him at shul, and she'd invite him for dinner, and sometimes I had a date with somebody else, but he was still at our house. And before I knew it, he asked me to marry him, and I agreed. And my aunts and uncles thought it was just terrible. Here I was, this young girl. What did I know? I probably knew nothing, but, I mean, it's a gamble, and it was a good gamble. I mean, we worked at it and worked hard at it, and I think I appreciated the marriage and the family even more so because I came from the broken home. Although I had all the support, there were always some stigmas attached. I mean, in those years, there weren't that many single parents, and you had to sort of make up stories when you were at school or when you brought friends to the house. It wasn't the usual household with all of the aunts and uncles.